There we go. 1, 2, 1, 2. Test, test, test. Yes. Working, working, working. Let's get this tidied up. Here we go. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the live stream. Hope you're well. How are you? Good, good, good. I'm fine too. Oh, hello. Didn't see you there. Come on in. Yeah. All good. Welcome to the podcast. Welcome to the live stream of politics, culture, and some other shit. Tonight, as you know, I'm going to be doing a movie review. Something that is not my thing. I'm not qualified to do a movie review. Get this opened here with a few. Yeah. So, I'm not qualified to do this. This is not me. I'm not a mad movie head or anything like that. I do enjoy movies. I'm a culture buff. A culture vulture, as we say. Right, I think that's me. I think I've all my stuff done. So this podcast is going to be dedicated to the movie Arct, which means monster. As Gaelica, as you know. Geodá Jagos Faltia, I should say. Saying this is about an Irish language movie. So, yeah. I'm just going to get... Yeah, I think I'm good to go. As always, this is going out on... the live stream on YouTube. If anybody wants to join me, please do. Just type, there's a couple on there at the minute, so I'm just going to say hello to them. Hello and welcome. You're right. There we go. Could you have more tattoo, Mokara? Tell me go moi, Mokara. August 2. August Tussa, I should say. And you? Yeah. So there we go. Oh, I do love speaking Irish. Nothing very good at it. So, yeah. Yeah. So, updates. Updates before we get to the main... thing. First of all, the Bonnevilles, we've announced a tour of the UK and Ireland is coming, so this is the UK leg of it, and we're going to be doing it with our good buddies, Mudlow. Let's see where I've put the picture. So it's going to be in February. Can't wait. We've been 2 years off the road, nearly enough. At this point it will have been 2 years, so we're playing. So starting February 4th in Edinburgh, playing the Banshee Labyrinth, which is a great name for a club. I've never been there before, that's fucking brilliant. Glasgow's nice and sleazy, Saturday the 5th. Montrose, Sunday the 6th, playing the Black Abbot, which is our friend's bar in Montrose, the Mo. And we love to go to the Montrose. We used to have this booking agent, and he used to, big London guy, and he used to kind of, sort of, looked at us bewilderingly as the way we always played Montrose. Well, there's a couple of reasons. One, the people there are absolutely lovely and they love us and they've treated us like kings ever since before, since we started. Every time we went, they always turned out for us and made us feel great. And let's face it, they put money in our pockets and we had a great time, so why the fuck wouldn't we go back? But there's another reason. One of the best kebabs we've ever had, we get in Montrose, so we always try to go back there for both of those reasons. So, Monday the 7th, base camp in Middlesbrough. Tuesday the 8th, the Underworld in London, which is a good club, good room, we believe. I've never played there, I don't think. Wednesday the 9th, the Bunkhouse in Swansea. Thursday the 10th, the Pavilion in Colwyn Bay, which is my birthday. That is my birthday in February the 10th. Friday the 11th, the Clooney in Newcastle, another one of our favourite places. Saturday the 12th, St. Patrick's Irish Club in Leamington Spa. Another one of our favourite places, Leamington Spa. We've never played St. Patrick's Irish Club. This is our first time there. And Sunday the 13th, the Rialto Theatre in Brighton. All those dates are in February, and we're playing all of them with our good buddies Mudlow. So you should get on that. Get onto our website, thebonnevilles.co.uk, or Facebook or whatever, and you get a link for tickets there. So that's great. What else have I got written down here? Oh, Northern Ireland Music Prize. So you know my solo record has been nominated for the Northern Ireland Music Prize. They're able to do Michael Lear. Oh, people are talking Irish in the live stream. Love it. So the Northern Ireland Music Prize managed to get they're doing the thing in the Ulster Hall. So there's tickets available for that. So if you Google Northern Ireland Music Prize, you'll get the website. And if you want to go, it's open to the public. You know, I don't know what the arrangements are. I don't know if it's seated, if it's limited, or whatever it is. But I'm going to be going, and Chris is going to be going, and my beautiful wife, Janie, she's going to be going. And I can't wait. As you know, I'm not going to win this thing. I'm not going to say I don't mind, because I'd love to win it. The money will be handy, never mind anything else. But it's cool. So happy just to go. Happy just to be nominated. People say that, don't they? They fucking mean it. It's a thing. So there's that. What else? I think that's it. I think that's me up to date. Yeah. So let's shut this down. Shut this music down. And we're going to... I might finish this live stream with a song. I've got a song from my solo record that it's not about the famine. It's not about, but there's parts of it sort of remind me of bits of this movie. The sea and the boatman and the stone walls and the way of life as it was back then. Because my own family sort of come from Mayo originally. But even they moved to the lock here, and they still live down there. And I remember my grandfather and all that sort of stuff. So if I have time, I might finish with that. So, as you know, last week I went to see a film, Arracht, which means monster in Irish. And if you can go to see it while it's still in the cinema, you should. I went to see it in QFT in Belfast, but I believe that it's got a wide release. I think, as far as I know, you can go to your local Megadome and see it there. And it's sort of stayed with me. It won't leave my head. And I keep thinking about it. And so what I'm going to do for this podcast live stream is I'm going to read my review of it for you, and then I'm going to talk a bit about the review is spoiler free, so you're going to be able to listen to this and still go to the cinema and enjoy, such as it is, the movie in all its terrible glory. And then after I've done my review, I'm going to read you a couple of things about and Gordon Moore, The Great Hunger. You know? So I'm going to talk about the political situation, what led us to get to where we are, the colonialism, capitalism, and all this stuff. Is that all right? So let's get going. So here we go. So I'm going to give you a brief synopsis, just a paragraph of a synopsis at the start, and then I'm going to get into a bit more depth. And again, it's like sort of 2 A4 pages of a review, okay? So here we go. In 1845, on the eve of an Gorta Mór, the Great Hunger, Coleman Sharkey, a Connemara fisherman, doesn't know it yet, but he's about to experience the potato blight. This is a short synopsis of the plot, by the way, which has already come to Ireland, but has not yet arrived as far west, but very soon will. Coleman takes Patsy, a deserter from the Napoleonic Wars, as a companion, and they make their way back to the landlord's house, just as he himself is shutting the house down for winter and heading back to England. Coleman's intent to plead with him on behalf of the village to postpone the rise in rents, just as the crop failure has hit. A scuffle ensues and murders are done, the blame of which are put on Coleman. A highly intelligent and industrious man, he manages to survive on an island, but it's clear he has suffered greatly in order to make it this far, to Black 47, the worst year of the famine, which claimed 500,000 lives. Coleman, driven mad by hunger and grief, is given a new desire to live when he meets Kitty, a young girl on the brink of death herself. Together they become the hope for more than just themselves as they deal with the ravages of the famine and the bounty on Coleman's head. So that's the synopsis, spoiler free, and I'm going to read the rest of the review, which is spoiler free, so you should be able to listen to this and it won't interfere. And I'm just checking that I've got no other music on the screen, so I'm not going to balls this up. It all seems to be good. So, Arrakt on the Surface is a film about a man's struggle to survive the hellscape of famine in Ireland. That's on the surface. Something a reviewer from the Guardian newspaper, more on that later, or maybe not, I may not have time, embarrassingly, in my opinion, was incapable of scratching beneath, either deliberately or in order to not acknowledge the true nature of this film, which is, to quote from the film, "How did this happen to us?" And the reply from Coleman, "It didn't just happen to us, it was done to us." We are shown the life of Connemara fisherman Coleman Sharkey and his family as it existed shortly before Angarta Moor. We are shown the love they had for one another, the old ways of making medicine and poaching, all framed in the dramatic, rugged landscape of Connemara, which is a character and an influencing force on its own, driving the narrative as the seasons change in the film. The characters of Coleman and his wife and the The characters of Coleman and his wife and child in particular are not just grubby one-dimensional tenant farmers. As characters like these can often be portrayed, their lives are no doubt difficult and unfair due to the nature of colonialism, but they are loved and love alike and have lives full of meaning and are interesting. With this, the director Thomas O'Sullivan manages to create very quickly a sense of foreboding, as we the audience know the disaster incoming and are at once innocent viewers and mawkish voyeurs, and that is to the writer and director's credit. They have created a film of such beauty which is so easily appreciated, but a story so harrowing it made me feel guilty and at times angry. We as viewer know this is a famine and not just a crop failure. As we watch the hunger take its victims, the actor playing Coleman, Donal O'Healy, loses an incredible 4 stone for the role and in the process creates a skin we now cannot imagine anyone else ever being in. Coleman Sharkey should now be synonymous with the greatest of tragic heroes from Irish art and mythology. The cinematography by Kate McCullough, as you would expect by now, is breathtaking. It's slow and gentle and sensitive, never once betraying itself by trying to overstimulate the landscape. Simply allowing it to breathe and express itself skillfully and understated. The film addresses so much without ever hammering us over the head, simply said or shown and moved on from without exposition, assuming the viewer intellect enough to process. "A nice house," says Patsy to Coleman. "Pity I don't own the land it's on," he replies, for example. Or when the landlord, played by a villainous Michael McElhattan, in shutting the house for the winter in the mouth of what he knows is at least a crop failure, whilst putting up rents and letting all the staff go without means, says, "We've had crop failure before and the mortality rate was acceptable." His haughty, Trevelyan-esque superiority and entitlement illustrated the deliberate dehumanising of the native Irish in order to give cover for the cruelties of the Crown and its agents. There are many moments like these which left me reeling, And I appreciated the space they were given, as they live long after you've left the cinema. This is not a political film, but as we know what happened to Crait and Gort Amore, and as the film develops, we inevitably fill in the gaps that led Coleman Sharkey to this terrible place. The famine that took place between 1845 and 1850 lives strong in our collective memory. That we have a culture left to call our own is remarkable given the severity of it. The population decline started in 1845 and didn't stabilise to 3 million until the 1890s, and is now only getting back to its peak of around 8 million 170 years later. I'll give the last word to the director, Thomas O'Sullivan, a snippet from an Irish Times review with him. It's a seminal moment in Irish history that unusually has rarely been depicted on the silver screen. Tom O'Sullivan is all too aware of this, revealing that he was warned by a top Irish director, "Don't fuck it up." He said, "I mentioned to a well-known director, who I won't mention now, he's pretty famous and he's an Irish director. I was talking to him one day, just bumped into him, and I told him what I was doing, that it was a film centred on the famine, and his response was, "Oh, risky, don't fuck it up." Sullivan continued, "I don't know, I think there's a trepidation or fear of trying to tackle something so sacred. There's an awful lot that goes unsaid about the famine, and I think it's the same with any trauma. I think as a nation, we're traumatised. I think we're all learning. We're all in therapy now, trying to deal with the famine and the films that are going to come out. I think you're going to see more of us dealing with this and talking about it, and I think it's time." So, that's it. That's the review. Now, again, as I said, it's not a political film. It's not about politics. But we know the politics of the day, the politics of capitalism and colonialism, that created the situation. So, if you don't know about the famine or enough about if you only know a little about it, stay with me. You're about to hear. So, Black 47 is a reference to. There's a movie called Black 47, by the way. You should watch it as well. It's another Irish language one. Well, it's mostly Irish language. There's a lot of English characters in it, so they speak English. But it's fantastic. I love it. It's a bit more Django. Remember the film Django? It's a bit like that, about a guy getting revenge. But it's class. I love it. So, this is an essay about Ireland in Black 47, 1847. And it should fill in a lot of blanks for you. So, if you don't mind, I'd like to read it to you. So, here we go. England did not savour when the potato blight struck in 1845, caused by an airborne fungus called, and I'm not going to read that because I can't, it's Pythorpia infestans, there you go, that's the best I can do, that arrived in Ireland on cargo ships coming from the Americas. It turned lush green potato fields into putrid black slop. See, there, I learned something there already when I read this today. I didn't know that. I didn't know it was a virus. I didn't know it was an airborne fungus. I thought it was because they kept planting the same potato, the same crop in the field, and then you know you got to do crop rotation and all the rest of it. Well, they couldn't, but anyway. So, learn something. Obliterating the only staple food of some 3 million Irish rural peasants, by the end of what came to be known as the Great Hunger, 6 years later, more than 1 million of Ireland's 8 million people had died, and more than 1 million had emigrated, most to America. A million dead and a million fled. Isn't that the saying? Not only did England not save Ireland, but in the years leading up to the blight, the anti-Catholic British government had set in motion a series of events that, when combined with draconian social policies established while the Irish were starving, created a catastrophe so devastating, it has been described as the Irish Holocaust. Starting in 1695, the British began imposing a series of penal laws to punish the Irish for supporting the Catholic Stuart King. James II, in his attempt to ascend to the British throne. These laws were intended to hobble the Irish so they would never be able to threaten Protestant rule. Irish Catholics were stripped of their rights to vote, buy land, attend school, hold government office, possess weapons, speak their own language, or practice their religion. Those laws were in effect until 1829, when Daniel O'Connell, a Catholic lawyer from Kerry, won the fight to abolish them. But the British reformers weren't done with the Irish, whom they saw as an alien people without good moral character and who lacked the work ethic and a desire for self-reliance so valued in British society. By 1835, as British industrialisation destroyed Irish linen and woolen industries, and the role of the Irish in the UK economy became that of a market for surplus goods, widespread unemployment swept the island, and in 1838 the British government established the Poor Law Act, modelled on the English workhouse system. Once admitted to workhouse, poor families would be separated, forced to wear uniforms and set to work splitting rocks, doing laundry, men, women and children. It's no wonder that during this period nearly a million Irish left their homes for the United States, where they traded splitting rocks for building canals, roads and railways. In America, these hard-working people were in demand. Contractors placed ads in Irish newspapers, recruiting Irish workers to help build America's robust expansion. This was the Ireland to which a fungus wafted from southern England to Dublin. Its spores landed on healthy potato leaves, turning them black within days. Irish farmers found that they could dig healthy potatoes from under the black stinking plant, but they too turned black and rotted within days. By 1845, the blight had triggered a nationwide crop failure, the first of its kind. The government enacted many largely ineffective relief measures, expecting them to be temporary, since Ireland had experienced sporadic regional crop failures before. Remember what I said in the review with the landlord, said we've had crop failure before and the mortality rate was acceptable. The Prime Minister, Sir Robert Peel, himself purchased 2 shipments of American corn that he intended to be sold at cost to local relief organisations. However, the corn was indigestible unless it was milled, and there was a shortage of mills in Ireland. Corn was also no replacement for the potato, which is high in vitamin C and protein. The Irish ate 3 meals of boiled potatoes a day, roughly £14 for the average working man. Corn wasn't as nutritious nor as satisfying. Many Irish who subsisted on corn developed scurvy, a vitamin C deficiency disease. Relief came from outside the UK, from as far away as Calcutta and Bombay, the Choctaw Indians in the US, and from Philadelphia, with the Philadelphia Irish Famine Relief Committee and the Philadelphia Society of Friends, the Quakers. Here in Lurgan, the Quakers are very important to the history of this town, and they're very well loved and very well regarded people. I've been to a few Irish history lectures in the Quaker House, actually. Fantastic peoples. But and here in Lurgan, we've a famine graveyard, as pretty much everywhere does in Ireland, as you know. But we have a famine graveyard, and the people that died in Lurgan, most of them didn't die of starvation, but Lurgan was a main post trapped between Dublin and Belfast, and all the carriages and whatever horse, you know, the traffic would stop in Lurgan, and with it they would bring disease. So most of the famine deaths in Lurgan occurred through secondary diseases. So in Philadelphia, the Committee of Coloured Citizens held a meeting to raise money to give to abolitionist and former slave Frederick Douglass to donate to the Irish Relief when he went to Ireland in 1846. While British citizens contributed more than £400,000 to Irish Relief, the British government took a decidedly stoic stance, adhering to the popular economic trend of the time, laissez-faire, French for let it be, that favoured a free market and posited that all problems will eventually solve themselves by natural means, which is the current, you know, the thing of capitalism, the free market capitalism. Just the magic hand of the free market will solve all problems. And we still have people believe this to this day. However, the head of the British government's relief programme, Sir Charles Trevelyan, Boo! Made it clear that when he considered the problem, the Irish themselves, when he considered the problem, the Irish themselves and the lazy, ineffectual Irish agrarian economy, which he wrote in 1848, was a deep, inveterate root of social evil. So it was our fault that we were starving. That would be eliminated, he said, by the starvation sweeping the island, which he saw as a direct stroke of an all-wise and all-merciful providence, and a sharp but effectual remedy by which the cure is likely to be effected. The blight and the starvation that followed were too Trevelyan, the retribution of a vengeful God on a sinful people. The effect of this congruence of laissez-faire economics, Protestant belief in divine providence, plus a fundamental ethnic bias against the Irish was nothing short of genocidal. While the Irish were dying of starvation, cholera or typhus, the British were exporting more than enough grains and other crops from Ireland to feed the entire population. But because those were money crops and not food crops, the British government would not divert them to feed the hungry. 3/4 of Irish farmland was turned over to these cash crops and later to livestock, necessitating in the evictions of tenant farmers that were exported while the Irish starved. So there's a couple of controversial little things in that. So he used the word genocidal. He says there was nothing short of genocidal. Now, this is often spoke about when it comes to the famine and Gort de Mór. And people, let me see if I can, did I put it up? Let me see. So people will often say that it was a genocide. People who maybe and there are a lot of people that say it wasn't a genocide. But the reason that they say that it wasn't a genocide is because it doesn't fit the definition of genocide in the dictionary. So I've got it up on the screen there. You can see, so it's very short. What is genocide? So it's a deliberate killing of a large group of people, especially those of a particular race or nation. The term is recorded from the 1840s in relation to the Nazi rule in occupied Europe. So that's what genocide technically is, right? So to say that there was a genocide happened around is technically not true, but you're arguing about semantics, and it's whenever you're looking at a nation of over 8 million, and by the 1890s, beginning of the 20th century, we were down to 3.5 million, I think it was. That's 5 million. Now, over the period of an Gort de Mór, there was 1 million dead and 1 million fled, as I said. So it was 2 million, but the population kept going in decline. The country was fucked. Completely fucked. So to call it a deliberate genocide is maybe not correct. But if you wanted to argue the case, it was a genocide by any other means. You could have an argument. I personally don't think it was a genocide. I just think they didn't give a fuck. They didn't care. So that's what caused it. So, you know, where are we? So, yeah. So there we go. So now, another person that was mentioned in that was Trevelyan. And Robert Peel. So Robert Peel was the founder of the police, the Metropolitan Police, which is where you get the name the Peelers. So that's where they come from. So he was the Prime Minister at the time. And I want to and then Trevelyan. So Trevelyan was, you know, from the song Trevelyan's Corn. He stole Trevelyan's corn, Fields of Athenry, right? So we know where that is. But if you follow this podcast, or you follow this, or if you follow this podcast, you'll know that I always talk about a trailer had the sound on. Did it? Shit. Did the trailer have the sound on? Oh, fuck me. This goddamn... Sorry, I've just been told on the live stream that the trailer had the sound on. Ah, bollocks. Right, well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to read the review again because I want to get it all in. So, stay with me. I'll hit it again at the end. Because it's too good. I put too much effort into it for it not to hurt. See this software? It is such a pain in the dick. It really is. Thank you for letting me know, everybody on YouTube. My God. Nah, whatever. So, where was I? Lost my way. Yep, so, yes, so to do with colonialism and capitalism, that dehumanization that needs to happen, it needs to happen in order for the agents of the crown and the agents of the empire, in order to do their cruelties, these things have to happen. So that's why we were, Trevelyan could look at what was going on to people starving and starving to death. And just, you know, say it's their own fault. They're unindustrious. And that's another thing that's mentioned in the movie about, you know, not everyone's as industrious as you, Coleman. You know, as if they're lazy. And it's awful. It's really awful. So I'm going to read this last little article and then I'm going to get back to, I'm going to read the review again. So, I didn't know about this. This is a thing, I'll put it up on the screen. It's a thing called hunger pots, famine pots, there you go, right? Now, I hadn't heard of this. So, the humble famine pot's sole purpose was to feed the starving population in the packed workhouses and the temporary soup kitchens that have been set up around the country. And that's where the phrase, have you ever heard the phrase, taking the soup? So the ministers would go to try and convert the native people who were mostly, well, pretty much exclusively Catholic to Protestantism. They would offer a soup, you know, of two starving people. And you had, but you had to say, they would say, do you denounce the Church of Rome and all that stuff? But you'd have to reply in English. And then they would give you soup. And that's what's called taking the soup. So if you ever hear it, it's an insult in Ireland. If you ever hear anybody accusing you of it, just think about what they're accusing you of. It's very, very heavy. So we have the Quakers to thank for mobilising relief aid from around the world to come to the rescue of the Irish. Many of them were merchants and businessmen. And through their worldwide appeals, food, money and clothing poured into Ireland on a scale unprecedented up to that time. With only 3,000 Quakers in Ireland and a population of around 8 million, they worked tirelessly and some died from famine-related illnesses. It is very true. In the winter of 1846, the Quakers provided 294 big cauldrons, which would later become known as famine pots, to set up the first soup kitchens. When I said the other thing, taking the soup, isn't that what I'm talking about? I'm not talking about the Quakers. The pots came from a number of different sources. The Quakers from Ireland, England and the US donated pots. The Philadelphia Irish Famine Relief Committee and the Philadelphia Society of Friends, the Quakers, led by Thomas Cope, funneled relief and supplies from all over the United States to Ireland. Now, where do you hear this? The Sultan of Turkey donated some pots. He also wanted to donate £10,000, equivalent to about $39 million today. But the Queen Victoria's diplomats said it would be unseemly to donate more than the crown, since their donation was 5,000. So the Sultan donated 1,000 and also secretly sent ships with the food. The British government followed the Quaker example in setting up soup kitchens and supplied 600 pots. So the Quaker, the Sultan of Turkey, wasn't able to donate any more than the Queen of England. Isn't that a bit fucked up? Because it would be embarrassing to her. I think she'd just match his... Unbelievable. Ugh, I can't believe the fucking spoke all over the top of that thing was playing in the background. I didn't realise it did that. But anyway. So, yeah, and somebody said on, yep, Priti Patel threatened to starve Ireland over Brexit. That's true. That's on the YouTubes. So, the first workhouse was set up in 1841. That was to do with, remember the thing I was reading earlier on? They have been described as the most feared and hated institution ever established in Ireland. However, we cannot blame the famine pot for the sins of its keeper. By 1847, there were 1,850 temporary soup kitchens in operation nationwide, and millions of people were dependent on a daily serving of soup or stirabout from the humble pots. However, almost as quickly as soup kitchens were set up, they were also closed. Charles Trevelyan, in control of famine policy, wanted to prevent the Irish from becoming habitually dependent on the British government. Fuck me. There's people in Northern Ireland today who still think that. Still think like that. The meals that were made in these pots come from food purchased supplied by relief or sometimes grown by the workhouses. Unfortunately, the recipes were generally not balanced for minerals and vitamins and over time gave rise to scurvy and other diseases. Substitute ingredients were used often, like treacle and water, used as a milk substitute, and Indian meal instead of oatmeal. This example of a soup recipe could feed roughly 800 people per 100 gallons, 92 gallons of which was water, 96 pounds of flour, 20 pounds of parsnips, 20 pounds of turnips, 7 pounds of beet, 7 pounds of onions, 14 ounces of pepper, 7.5 pounds of salt. Alex Sawyer, a high-profile French chef, set up a model soup kitchen in Dublin where his recipes were supposed to provide sufficient nutritional value for those in dire need. Accounts suggest that as many as 5,000 people a day were fed at this soup kitchen alone. After the famine, little value was attached to these pots, and many of them were used by farmers to feed animals, whole grain, or for other farming needs. They have been used as garden planters and ornamental pieces. However, in recent years, there's been a resurgence of interest in these once vital objects. There you go. The famine pot. I didn't know that was a thing until I read that article. So, listen. I fucked up the thing. So, I'm gonna read it again. And the film also, by the way, was... there was a chance it was going to be nominated for an Oscar. It nearly got longlisted, I believe. So, it never quite got to the... to the Oscars, but it nearly did. So, and I think it should have. So there we go. That's me. All done. I'm gonna call it. I'm not gonna say I hope you enjoyed that but I hope you appreciated it for what it was. And I would urge you to go to the cinema to see this film. It's really, really, really important. And as the director mentioned in that interview in the Irish Times, I think we're going to be hearing a lot more about Irish history and things like the famine, and in Irish, which will be fantastic. I think we're going to hear and see a lot more of these things going forward. So, there you go. That's it. That's the thing. Thanks, everybody. I appreciate it. I'm going to have to cut that bit out at the start. And swap these. You're going to have to edit these. I can't believe I fucked that up. So that I don't get this yanked from YouTube. But there we go. So, cheerio everybody. Hope you have fun. Have a nice week. And talk to you soon.